welcome to Mr. Kaufman. We have before us three agenda items. The quarterly interaction and the objective is to assess your performance
actual versus budget, as well as other matters that relate to what you're doing currently for the past 8 months. We're also going to have a discussion around the seven-day establishment and the OSDs. And we're going to have a discussion around healthcare programs in the department. So those are the three items that we'd ask the department to come prepared to respond to. We also have in attendance the Auditor General, as is standard practice, in case we have questions that we need experts' opinion on. So the Auditor General is not expected to make any input, but we will defer to you for expert opinion as and when we need it. So welcome everybody. We're going to start our proceedings, but as opening remarks, as I said earlier on, we're 8 months into our new financial year, and at the beginning of our term of office, as a committee, we identified administration as one of the areas we were going to focus on as a means to correcting or as a means of improving on the department's audit opinions over the past years. And I just want to remind or just touch on one or two amongst others that we looked at. We looked at outsourcing, and there were serious concerns from the committee. We looked at your human resource capacity, vacancies, long suspensions. Last week, I think we had the last interaction on that. We focused on and asked questions around your self-sustainability as part of the austerity measures that government is calling for. And we also looked at previous COPA recommendations, amongst other things. And all that was aimed at ensuring that we don't repeat an audit report that we've received in the past. In the past, we've also agreed that this kind of interaction derives its authority from the Constitution. So it's not a nice to have or a matter of ticking the blocks. We've come to the committee, it's derived from the Constitution that demands a parliamentary oversight over the executive. We also derive our authority in terms of this interaction from the PFMA, where the accounting officer is expected to account to Parliament. Again, not an end in itself, but a means towards an end, and that end being service delivery to the people of South Africa through us as portfolio committee representatives of the people. I'm saying this because last week we had an interaction with the department. That was planned in advance, and only one member of the department appeared before the committee. Only one member of the department appeared before the committee. And the reasons given to us were that people missed their flight, I know that the accounting officer was ill and we received your apology. But other people missed their flight. Now, lack of planning by the department, or the excuse of financial constraints, can't be tolerated by this committee or by Parliament for the department not appearing before us. We also want to indicate, because we're doing an evaluation for the past few months that we've met you, we also want to indicate to this department that DCS is a national institution and not a federal organization. Last week when we inquired about long suspensions, we were informed that we can't answer it at HQ level because this is done at the provinces, at regions. Accounting officer, DCS is a national institution. And therefore you must get to your accountability lines in order. When we talk to the accounting officer, we'd expect you want to have a report of what is happening in the Bergville prison that has 35 members. We can't have a situation where HQ comes and says we can't answer to Parliament because regions are responsible for this function and therefore we don't get answers. It's not acceptable. We also agreed last week, Commissioner Ewan, I'm saying it to you so that you understand the context. We also agreed last week with the Minister that one of the fundamental problems is attitude and a culture of non-accountability. We agreed with the Minister. Part of the problem is just this culture of lack of accountability. So it's an attitudinal problem. And we'd want to encourage the department to address that matter. We also want to recommend, accounting officer, that when we have an interaction with you, that you or your officials take note of the requests of the department and respond within the agreed time frame. Around about September, we met with officials of the department, I think it was the regional commissioners, spoke about or asked them for information. As an example, one of them was the status of the unnatural deaths in the facilities. Promised to come back to us. To date, they've not come back to us. We asked for statistics from other individuals. To date, they've not come back to this committee. And I think at the time, we had asked 14 days to be the time frame in which this has to come back. It hasn't come back to us. September, it's now in November. It's not going to be accepted by the Correctional Services Portfolio Committee beyond today. So we're ending our year having assessed what we've done to date. Because I do believe that from our next interaction, this committee will recommend three or four areas that we're going to focus on and stick on. Because we can't just talk for talking's sake. It's been a learning curve for all of us, but I think this is where learning stops and accountability kicks in. So having said that, Commissioner, you will be afforded an opportunity to respond if you so wish. You will be afforded for the opening remarks before we start, just so that we have a clear understanding, both of us, committee and department, where we're going to. I'm saying this because, you know, this morning when I was doing my final preparations for for this hearing. Your very first bullet point, your very first bullet point that you're going to open up with today, says almost all reports attribute lack of progress and achievement to lack of funds. Your very first bullet point starts off with an excuse for lack of progress. And yet we've spent 7 billion rand to date. 7 billion rand spent to date, and your very first opening bullet point comes as an excuse, lack of progress in this department because of lack of funds. And we've spent 7 billion rand. So when you do respond, Commissioner, respond understanding that this is where we're coming from as a committee. Again, we want to emphasize the culture of non-accountability and of attitude. And we do think that the time has come where all of us begin to change the way we do business. Certainly the Portfolio Committee of Correctional Services has taken that stance. We are appealing that you also take that type of a stance so that together we fix up the problems of the country in terms of correctional services. Those are the opening remarks. I'm not sure if you want to comment, and you're free to comment, Commissioner. We will hold you accountable in future to whatever comments you and your department make going forward. But after your comments, you can immediately kick into your presentation. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, good morning, and good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee, and thank you for your opening remarks. We will certainly take them back very directly. On the issue of the national competency, we are fully cognizant of the point that is being made, and it's in fact an issue that we are currently addressing within the department to ensure that we have performance information available at a central point in DCS. It's a process that we are making progress on, but we are not making sufficient progress on, but it has been an issue that has been raised with managers in the course of the second quarter that we are reporting on. So we do commit ourselves to addressing that and ensuring that we are able, as a national office, to be accountable for the performance of the department. On the issues that are still outstanding, we had taken stock this morning and had identified that most of the issues we had in fact completed. We will just do a double check against those lists and ensure that we do in fact close off those processes, and we will interact with your support staff to the committee to ensure that our list and your list coincide on that regard. In terms of the issue of the accountability, I think from where we are sitting, the opportunities that are afforded to be able to come and present to the committee, to be interrogated with, interact with the committee, be engaged with by the committee, enables us to be able to ensure that we are learning the lessons and being able to take forward. So we are firmly committed to that spirit of accountability to the Portfolio Committee. We do apologize for the delegation mishaps of last week. And we have put in place a process to identify delegation weeks ahead and are able to better manage those processes. So hopefully in the new year, those issues will not be manifest in the way that you have reflected on them at this point in time. Let me move immediately to making some opening remarks before we move into the detail of the presentation. And I am going to ask Dr. Kutsia to speak to the performance information list and Gorba to speak to the finance part of the report at a fairly fast pace, so that we do leave space for interaction, particularly given that we've got three presentations to be dealing with in this time. In terms of performance highlights for the second quarter, Our major focus has been on the issues of the implementation of the OSD and the shift to the 7-day establishment. That process, given that we are a department that is human resource driven, that our real core business is done by the people in our department rather than by the goods and services, is a very, very significant element of putting our department in a better position to be able to deliver on the strategic plan and implement the white paper. But that process, while it's gone with its positive dimensions, has also gone with significant challenges that have really preoccupied us during the second quarter, and I think will explain some of the elements that you have picked up on in the presentation in relation to the tension between service delivery and our budget pressures. Effectively, the OSD has enabled us to identify centre-based correctional officials, non-centre-based correctional officials, and through that process also be moving to a point at which we are able to identify administration posts as public service posts. Going down the line, that is going to have an impact on our compensation of employees' budget and be able to involve us in some savings down the line. For this financial year, though, the fact that the OSD has been an unfunded OSD, that we have had to find the money within our own budget in relation to payment for the OSD, has put us under a budget pressure that has been quite enormous. And our focus for the second quarter, to a very large extent, has been on managing those processes. The OSD comes out of Resolution 1 of 2007. There has been a process in terms of the OSD that was signed on the 24th of June of this year to put in place a back pay to members of the department in lieu of the time period between the Resolution 1 of 2007 and the 1st of July of this year. And then there's the process, obviously, of them being paid at an OSD level for the rest of this financial year. So there are those two legs of the OSD funding that we've had to deal with in this year. And then obviously there are also the financial carry-through costs in terms of our compensation of employees' budget going forward that we have also had to address in our NTEC submission that took place again during this quarter. The process of migration of people to centre-based we've had to manage quite carefully, because what we are extremely cognizant about is that if we simply allow people to migrate to centre-based, the impact on our administration program and hence on the gains that we've made in terms of managing the administration program and trying to get ourselves out of qualifications, particularly within the field of asset management and supply chain management, could be disastrous. So we've had to manage that migration quite effectively. The details of that we would obviously touch on in the second presentation. With the OSD goes the shift to 7-day establishment. Again, a critically important transition process for the department. One, in terms of managing the criticism that we have been under from both Treasury and from the Portfolio Committee around the amount of money that has been spent on overtime, given that we've been functioning effectively 24 hours of the day, 365 days of the year, but on a normal 5-day working week. So in that sense, going down the line, as we'd indicated in the first quarter, it has budget savings for the department. But in addition, most importantly, in terms of the implementation of the white paper, it allows us a greater flexibility of time within the correctional centre and will impact on our structured day programs, our ability to deliver services to the inmates, to be able to use the opportunities that the Portfolio Committee has been focusing on in terms of rehabilitation interventions, work opportunities, offender labour, those types of issues. We are moving to a 2x12 shift system. That process has been managed by corporate services. We have an unevenness in the regions. Part of our complexity there is that no two correctional centres in this country are the same. So the infrastructural nature of the facility, the ratio, the number of staff that are employed in it, the ratio to inmates, all of those impact on how easy it is to shift a particular centre to the 2x12. But we are tracking that on a regular basis and making progress in that regard. What it has reflected back to us, and I think that this is a critical part of going forward, is that we have to do the detailed work of understanding a staffing model per correctional centre. If we try to plan on the basis of desktop planning, we land up being too generic, and we land up then, as we realised with the implementation of 7-day, that we then land up where there are in fact staff shortages in particular centres that has caused some challenges in this regard. The OSD funding, both in terms of the back pay and the rest of this financial year's payment for the back pay, has resulted in, as I indicated, severe budget pressure. We have interacted both with DPSA and Treasury in relation to this. We have a tripartite monitoring process We did approach Treasury in this regard in relation to the adjusted E&Es, and in the appropriation bill that was passed, or act that was passed last week, we were given a $595 million injection to deal with those elements. That did not cover the entire amount that we needed for the OSD, and we have been looking very specifically at ways within our own budget of being able to reprioritize and find that money. And that's where, Chairperson, that statement of due to budget pressure is going to be an element that comes up throughout this presentation. It has been a quarter in which we have had to find a balance between ensuring that we are able to focus on service delivery, but at the same time we are able to ensure compliance with the PFMA and be able to ensure that we are able to deal with the compensation of employees' processes. It's been a very difficult balance to find, one that we would prefer not to have been through, but I think that we have been struggling to find exactly where that balance between the two elements has lain. I've indicated that our MTF submission also picks up on the fact that this OSD process has down-the-line consequences for the MTF, and we have to ensure that the personnel resourcing of the department, the HR resourcing of the department, is addressed in order to be able to deliver effectively on the implementation of the white paper. As a result of the recognition from the beginning of this second quarter that the budget pressure due to the OSD was going to have a very severe impact, we put in place a moratorium on filling of posts so that we were able to deal with the calculation of exactly what the financial consequences of the OSD were, and we would then be able to determine whether there was, in fact, budget to be able to fill posts. And that moratorium is still in place as we speak, and it's part of the process of trying to avoid a situation in which we overspend on the compensation of employees' budget by the end of the year. That obviously puts us in a situation in which, in relation to particular categories of personnel, for example, community pharmacists, parole board chair people, those that are absolutely critical heads of centres, we need to be able to take harsh decisions in relation to the tension between the overexpenditure and the strategic need and the risk attached to not filling those posts. Apart from the moratorium, we have also done a very critical analysis during the course of this time of the budget allocations to all budget programs to identify any money that was not contractually obligated or that was not what we refer to as life and death issues, for example, dealing with issues of feeding and caring for offenders or dealing with the feeding of livestock, those types of issues that are absolutely essential expenditure items, to be able to find what savings we can to environment that money into the compensation of employees process. We've also been through a process of identifying and enhancing belt-tightening measures that we put in place in the previous financial year, but introducing others as well to be able to ensure that we are spending money only on the real essential elements. So, Chairperson, it's not an issue that we have done willy-nilly. It's not an issue that we've not done without some very serious self-examination about the impact of us doing that. But the unfunding of the OSD has put us in a situation in which we have had to manage that process going forward in relation to that. I think the committee is also aware of the fact that it has been a period in which, in relation to investigations, we have had some suspensions and some disciplinary processes that we are going through at this point in time. I think, in conclusion of my opening remarks, we have also, at the end of this quarter, prepared as executive management for our mid-year strategic review. And against the process that we've been through during this quarter of having to engage with our budget in relation to the pressure from the OSD, we have gone into the mid-year review with a particular focus that acknowledges that the country is in a recession and that we cannot simply be continuing to assume that budgets are there as they have been in the past. and recognizing that getting out of a recession is not something that happens within one financial year, and that we need to bear that in mind going forward. We have also taken into it a very clear understanding of our own budget pressure, and that the consequences of the OSD implementation in this year does have carry-through costs down the line, both in terms of the carry-through costs of the payments that have been made now and in terms of phase two of the OSD, which is recognition of levels of experience, but also in terms of the shift to then having public service posts as opposed to correctional services posts within the department and needing to deal with that. The impact of the moratorium on our vacancy level has been an anxiety in the department. It's obviously increased our vacancy level, whereas our strategic goal is to decrease it, and we need to ensure that going forward we're able to try and manage that as well. And that is a process which we are currently interacting with Treasury on to try and ensure that we are able, even within a context of a recession, to manage that process. We have tried in the preparation for the mid-year strategic review to focus ourselves very specifically and avoid landing up trying to do more than our budget will enable us to do, and to be able to focus our budgets quite specifically. The implementation of the seven-day establishment is obviously a critical strategic focus that will continue through to into the next financial year. We have implemented it. We are paying on the basis of seven-day, but we need to be able to ensure that it is implemented, the 2x12 shift is implemented across all centres, and that we review that and monitor it very meticulously until we are comfortable that it has consolidated in the department. We've lifted up the issue of offender labour as a key element that we need to be looking at. The shift to 7 day enables us to have far greater time available for the utilisation of offender labour, and that is a key focus that we want to be able to build on going forward. Stakeholder relations management, particularly at centre level, and our partnerships with the criminal justice system is another priority area. The offender population management, both in terms of remand detainees and sentenced offenders, the issue of overcrowding is obviously a critical one. With the levels of overcrowding that we continue to have, one, it puts a serious budget pressure, particularly in relation to our stores and the provision of food and care and clothing to inmates, but at the same time it also impacts negatively on our ability to provide the rehabilitation services to our inmates. We've lifted up children and young offenders as a critical element, but I think that it's also important for us to recognise that through the JCPS there's also the recognition that the increasing trend of violent crime offenders is also something that needs to have specific attention. We have lifted up the issue of parole. We have in this quarter had a parole summit convened by our minister that enabled us to do a thorough examination of the parole system, the challenges, both logistical and administrative challenges, as well as the processes of the parole decision-making. There's an action plan that is currently being developed in relation to that that we will need to then take forward and cost and be able to take forward. The improvement of governance, in particular management of debt control, loss control and inventory control, remains a focus going through into the strategic planning processes for the MTF. The focus that we had spoken to the Portfolio Committee on, I think 2 weeks back, around our legislative framework, the Acts, the Regulations and Delegations being reviewed, will be a focus area of the next financial year. Remand detention, obviously, as a cabinet priority, remains a critical area of work going forward. And then our focus remains on, in terms of the operations environment, on delivery on our performance indicators, those 43 that we've listed in the strategic plan, and ensuring that that service delivery goes ahead. I think that we are acutely aware of a serious tension between our commitment to deliver on government priorities, on the white paper, on the issues coming from the Criminal Justice Review, on our own strategic plan targets, and the challenges that we are facing in terms of our budget processes, the budget pressure that we're under as a result, primarily of the OSD, but compounded also obviously by the recession and the budget cuts that have come through in relation to that. Our MTEC submission had been adjusted at the request of Treasury, as they had requested all departments to take into account the fact that there is less money in the government coffers than than there has been. Chairperson, I thought that I should raise those issues as opening remarks to really put up front the challenges that we are managing with. It is not an easy situation for the management to be involved in, and we are constantly trying to balance our commitment to ensuring service delivery and particularly rehabilitation interventions to the inmates, but at the same time managing it within a particular environment that has put very severe pressures and our accountability in terms of the PFMA. We've been trying to find that balance going forward. So with that, Chairperson, if we could ask Dr. Kutsia to speak as briefly as possible during to the presentation, because it has been circulated to people beforehand. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Commissioner, Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee. I present to you the administrative report of the Department of Correctional Services for the second quarter of the 2009-10 financial year. Slide 2 and 3 just give you a summary of the content of the presentation. But when we go to slide 5, as the Honourable Chairperson already alluded to, the first bullet that indicates that a lack of progress and achievements due to the lack of funds. The executive summary is coming from the report and just highlighted the following issues that's reflected in the report. Chairperson, I will also take the two strategies of the department vis the regulatory and monitoring strategy that reflects the work that is being done at the national office, and then the operation strategy that reflects the work that is being done in the 6 regions of the department, and situate the 7 budget programs within those 2 strategies. So slide 5 then, just a summary of the highlights coming from the report. In slide 6, we have listed some of the issues that requires attention coming from the report, the second quarterly report of the department, and that is that security is a concern at the LMN region and KwaZulu-Natal, and in particular the functioning, because of the functioning of control rooms and the electronic systems. Asset management, the department has been qualified in asset management in the 08-09 financial year, and the report for the second quarter still point to this problem area. The 2 shift system that has been mentioned by the Acting Commissioner, budget constraints, and the reporting on performance information is also still a concern in the sense that it is hard to obtain the information. Again, it has been mentioned by the Acting Commissioner that we are in the process of getting a centralized process of getting the information. The progress on priorities within the department, the management of awaiting trial detainees on slide 7, poverty alleviation, and the delivery on the social cluster priorities. This slide just reflects some of the work that has been done within those priority areas. Stakeholder management, that's also been mentioned, and human resource management and development. If I can go now, Chair, to the regulatory and monitoring strategy of the department and look at program or budget program administration, the following took place within the second quarter of the 2009-10 financial year. The Branch Finance developed several initiatives and distributed a number of circulars during this belt-tightening period. The internship program has been severely affected by the budget cuts to the extent that the department only took in 100 interns. The electronic document and records management system, or EDRMS, is a possible solution to information management and integrity, but the project has also been stalled due to various reasons, including budget constraints. The monitoring of the Correctional Services Act project is nearing its completion, and that will leave the department with a tool to measure its compliance with the Correctional Services Act. The image turnaround campaign, there's slow progress in that regard, and the first phase of the remand detention and offender management system is under development. If we can go to slide 10, that deals with budget program security. Escapes and assaults performing lower than the target set, with the exception of KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest regions. Unnatural deaths continue to increase, and there is a slide later on that just gives a summary of the status for the second quarter in terms of unnatural death and escapes. The anti-gang strategy, or the gang strategy task team, have developed a draft gang management strategy framework document during August 2009. The progress in this regard has been stalled by the consultation progress. Budget program corrections. There's no clear progress on procedures on remuneration of NGOs. The M&E visit schedule needs to be re-looked. It's not clear what it is doing from the report, whether it's different from what the inspectorate and internal audit is doing. And then budget constraints is a running theme through all the branches of the national office. Development and care is the next branch that I'm going to touch on. There's a monitoring and evaluation framework that are the visits are being conducted to, and again the concern about duplication of work that is being done by inspectorate and internal audit. So the matter to be taken up with the relevant branches and to just to get clarity on that. The branch development and care is participating well in the social sector cluster, but the concern is raised about capacity of the branch to fulfill its obligations within that those activities. Progress during that quarter was slow around improvements of stakeholder relations, and there's a red flag in relation to monitoring delivery against performance indicators. Program social reintegration, a model for monitoring the correctional supervision and parole boards have been finalized, but there's no progress in some key areas of the operational plan and no explanation provided in terms of the lack of progress. For example, the development of a concept document on criminal record clearance and the victim offender mediation model and development of an electronic system to track ex-offenders. In terms of budget program facilities, again, Honorable Chairperson, the budgetary constraints appears to have had more impact on this program than on most of the other programs. But there's also a need to review some strategies under facilities and to reprioritize. And much of the work in facilities appears to be delayed by the inability to appoint consultants. That's the regulatory and monitoring strategy, in other words, the work that has been done by the national office. When we go to the regions, the operational strategy, first region, Gauteng, they've implemented, or the seven-day establishment has been implemented in the entire region. The target for escape is, or was at that time, 4.75 per 10,000 for the quarter, and there was only one escape that took place from a public hospital in Johannesburg Management Area. The personnel for security control rooms at all the centers appointed during this quarter for Gauteng region. The control room supervisors received training at Zondervater. But the integrated security system has been activated by the National Office on the 8th of September 2009 at Zondervater and Bavianspoort Management Areas. And the recent reported assaults decreased from 398 in the first quarter to 352 in the second quarter. The parole boards, building of remaining parole board officers that have progressed at Johannesburg, Zondervater, and Bavianspoort. And then also in the region, the World Health Organization visited South Africa, and as part of the National Health TB Monitoring and Evaluation Program. They visited Pretoria Central Correctional Center, and we hope that we'll get the report from the WHO in terms of that visit. The social workers at Johannesburg Management Area successfully placed 29 babies under alternative care. Skills development has been taken care of in the region. Engineering studies, national curriculum, vocational, computer skills and entrepreneurial skills have been attended to, and also the officials responsible for delivering those skills development programs have been orientated in the skills development procedure manual. Pretoria Local Correctional Center has been identified and established as a remand detention facility during that period. The construction for video arraignment project completed but not yet operationalized, and all centers with the exception of Pretoria Central and Johannesburg Medium A and B fully comply with Section 8.5 of the Correctional Services Act, and that refers to the interval between meals. The second region, Chairperson and members of the committee, is LMN region on Limpopo and Mpumalanga Northwest. They had a compliance improvement plan inspection during that period, and in terms of finance and supply chain management, the level of compliance ranged for finance between 75% and 94%, and for supply chain management between 89% and 95%. Tsanmien Correctional Center in that region achieved 100% compliance in terms of the compliance improvement plan. The region has got a vacancy rate for scarce skills at 35.87%, and the 7-day establishment and OSD for correctional officials implemented successfully in the LMN region. And then there was also the visit during that second quarter by the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services to Modimolle Center of Excellence. In LMN, we have 3 escapes, 1,442 offenders participated in correctional programs against the set target of 686. The structured day program, 100% implemented in all centers, and 690 correctional sentence plans. Out of 1,215 newly admitted offenders serving 24 months and longer have been developed. That is a statutory requirement that all offenders need to have correctional sentence plans, those serving 24 months and longer. Overcrowding in the region for the second quarter was at 20%, and awaiting trial detainees overcrowding reduced by 4.5%, and for sentence offenders reduced by more than 6%. Slide 20 shows us that offenders do have 100% access to primary health care in that region. A memorandum of understanding on partnership signed with the University of Venla to embrace development and care functions, that is the assistance from the community. A backlog regarding offenders eligible for consideration for parole who have not been considered by the head of the correctional center or the correctional supervision and parole board has been reduced in the following way. Woodbank, the backlog reduced from 386 to 158 cases. Bethel has got 51 new cases. And Clarksdorp, Roehron, Rustenburg, Toyando do not have any backlog in that region. Chairperson, in the Western Cape, the administration of fleet management has improved during the second quarter, as well as the management of financial losses and management of debts. The rate of suspension of officials vastly decreased compared to the first quarter. The vacancy rate increased to 8.71% in the Western Cape, and the reason for that given was the moratorium on the filling of vacancies. 672 officials have been promoted from salary level 3 to salary level 5 after their completion of basic training, and the 7-day establishment implemented at all centers, and in the Western Cape they've also established a task team on the 7-day establishment. Their compliance improvement plan inspections 25% could not take place in the region, their own CIP inspections, because of budgetary constraints. There were no escapes in the Western Cape for that particular period, July to September 2009. However, there were five attempts to escape, and those are being investigated. In comparison with the same period last year, the number of assaults decreased from 330 to 220. The Western Cape had two unnatural deaths for the period July to September 2009. And the incarceration rate at 150%, that's slightly higher than the first quarter, where it was at 148%. Unit management implemented in 100% of the centers in the Western Cape, and all offenders with sentences longer than 24 months admitted at dedicated assessment centers of expertise have correctional sentence plans. Slide 23 just highlights the participation of external partners in the region, the salary upgrading of psychologists that as a way to get more psychologists within the department that has assisted the region, as well as the headhunting process. And the Western Cape also, the last bullet in that slide, implemented a comprehensive education and training curriculum in 10 management areas. Slide 24 again highlighted the issue of the first bullet, the partnership in the Western Cape between educational institutions and the work being done in correctional services. And the second bullet, Chair and members, the region had 4,133 offenders eligible for consideration by the Correctional Supervision and Parole Board and the head of correctional centers, and a total of 1,870 was approved, which constitutes a 35% increase compared to the first quarter. Day parole approvals increased from 17 in the first quarter to 21 in the second quarter. That constituted an increase of 20.1%. Violations, parole violations decreased from 27,951 in the first quarter to 19,999 in the second quarter. And the number of absconders traced increased from 163 in the first quarter to 233 in the second quarter, and that was partly due to a special absconder tracing week that they had in the region. The region Free State Northern Cape reported that they had an important arbitration test case finalized in favor of the department. Five applicants at Grimpen challenged substantive and procedural fairness of DCS interim promotion policy, and they failed. And the award is now being utilized by head office as a guide to defending similar cases in other regions. In response to Circular 1 of 2009, that is the determination of leave, the region established an action plan and provided to all management areas for implementation to improve on leave. Crack teams have been activated to audit leave in all management areas. And there was also a draft service level agreement between Free State Department of Health and the DCS compiled, and it is in the process of being consulted. Slide 27 again shows the interaction in the region between the education department and the Free State region in correctional services. Backlogs on correctional sentence plan have been reduced from 785 in the previous quarter to 293 in the reporting quarter. The number of assaults also dropped from 263 in the previous quarter to 171 in the reporting quarter, and Free State Northern Cape also had no escapes in the second quarter of this financial year. The backlogs of the Correctional Supervision and Parole Board cases have been down managed by 56%. That means from 1,037 in the first quarter to 578 in the reporting quarter. Chairperson, the Eastern Cape, through monitoring visits at two self-accounting stores and financial control offices at St. Albans and Kirkwood Management Area, the level of compliance was found to be high in financial management. the number of suspensions have been reduced to zero. The number of disciplinary cases pending reduced from 306 to 140, and no appeals pending at appeals authority level. 2,281 parolees and probationers employed against the target of 60. A total of 450 involved in community projects against the target of 80. The Eastern Cape also, on slide 29, maintained their record of zero escapes for the second quarter also. Correctional sentence plans for all newly admitted offenders have been developed. And the region successfully rolled out implementation of New Start VCT project to four management areas. The region was also successfully implemented comprehensive HIV and AIDS treatment with a total of 867 offenders on ARV treatment and only 85 offenders accessing ARVs from public health facilities, which also reduces cost. And then, Chairperson, the region KwaZulu-Natal. KwaZulu-Natal budgeted, or the budget have been redistributed within the region to center level with belt tightening exercise and the managers trained on spending plans and the purpose of in-year monitoring. Emphasis was placed on improvement of asset management and reduced losses and action plan crafted and it's being implemented. Limited training has taken place in the region as a result of belt tightening measures, and despite belt tightening measures and the moratorium on the filling of vacancies, the vacancy rate in the region did not increase. The biometric system implemented at all centers or units, excluding Ipopo, Matatiel, and Umzinkulu, and Ingwavuma. The officials in the region, all officials in the units, have been orientated or trained in the structured aid program. All centers are fully complying with the three-meal system, except for Kalakabusha, which complies in two units out of six only. The reduction of backlogs for the correctional sentence plan have been up to 3%, that is the reduction in the backlog. Overpopulation of centers reduced from 142% to 140%. And then slide 32 also just shows the first bullet, the stakeholder involvement in the region, in particular with regard to the delivery of social work, psychological service, and spiritual care, by means of a memorandum also of understanding signed with Kulisa, and offender labor in the region increased by 5%, and violations of parole and supervision conditions decreased by 1%. Chairperson and honorable members, the slide on slide 33 is just a summary of escapes, assaults, and unnatural deaths for the reporting period. There you will see there are 11 escapes for July to September, 1,072 assaults, 13 unnatural deaths, plus another three that are still under investigation and hence not being included in the official total of 13. And the different regions, how they perform in that regard is reflected in this slide. In terms of the challenges, Chairperson, bullet one have been mentioned over and over, the bats and logos slow to operate and severe virus infections experienced during that quarter. The implementation of 7-day and OSD left administration offices battling with capacity because officials migrated to the centers. Vacancy rate increased in many regions following the moratorium. One of the key challenges in relation to the implementation of the 7-day establishment reported by the regions is the shortage of skills, particularly the retention of scarce skills. And then on slide 35, more challenges relating to the installation of MIS software in Gauteng, the low allocation of offender labor in agriculture and production workshops in many management areas. Sentence plans are being developed in many management areas, as the report indicated, but the compilation of sentence plans is a challenge that requires attention. the increase of maximum classified offenders is posing a security risk as maximum inmates are being detained in medium classified facilities, and the number of vehicles exceeding their lifespan is high and replacement almost impossible due to unavailability of funds. That the administrative report from the Department for the Second Court, Chairperson. I will hand over to Mr. Ndubu that will take the committee through the financial report.
Thank you very much. Before we do that, maybe we should allow for members to comment on the operations side of it, if there are any. If not, we will go to the finances and you can comment. But I note, Mr. Sell, are there any more questions or interactions on this presentation? If not, Mr. Sell, Mr. Ndaka, you will follow Mr. Sell.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. I note during the presentation at various points one speaks up to the fact that there are more offenders in work, in labour, than has been the case in the past. But the challenge at the end, you say there's still a low allocation of offenders' labour in agriculture and production workshops in many management areas. Now, what I'm really liking to get to, in view of the comment that the chairperson made, is this really one of the focus areas, is where were we in the last quarter, where are we now, and where are we likely to be in the next quarter as far as this key area is concerned? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. In slide number 6, bullet point 2, asset management. I would like to know, Chairperson, what is wrong with asset management? Just a clarity. And also, who controls the asset register? Number 2, what causes confusion in implementing 7-day establishment, because I can see that it's a return implementation appears to have caused confusion in various centers. So that's why I want to know what causes this confusion. Okay, thanks to this.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and I thank also the accounting officer for the elaborate input. Now, I haven't heard anything about workshops projects. The one time there was a shortage of whatever, tools, whatever. Some were white elephants, they were not working, yes. And I think they are very important that if they are in existence in all these provinces, they can be of help to so that inmates are able to do work every day. Until there was one at St. Albans, which was there was a problem of not enough facilities for it, I do not know, and in many others also. Can elaborate on it.
Donkey, Worcester. Chairperson, I just want to determine vehicles are naturally central to your type of operation. And when you say that the number of vehicles are exceeding, there are a number of vehicles exceeding their lifespan, you say it is high, and replacement almost impossible. Have you perhaps determined what is the number? And when you say that they have exceeded their lifespan, what are your limits in terms of the lifespan? Is it based on mileage or condition, whether the engines need rebore, line bore, Or do you, what is your basis of determining? And what is the budget required to provide those vehicles? You should have some numbers available. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me raise three or four, then you can respond and we'll move on. Running throughout your presentation, you indicate less than 100% in attaining, or less than 100% achievement in those eligible for parole. You also talk about less than 100% for those that should have sentence planned according to the Act. Could somebody explain to us when is that going to be fixed up? I know that the first answer is going to be lack of HR people, but that is a requirement by your own Act. So can people indicate to us when do you hope to achieve 100% or close to 100% on those two? Then maybe you must elaborate. I don't quite understand when you say MNE. You yourself indicate that MNE seems to be duplicated by your internal audit and you're inspecting that. Just monitoring and evaluation, what was the objective of it? And if it is an exercise that can be performed by the inspecting judge or internal audit, why don't you just scan it and put it into rather than saying you're trying to understand the duplication? And then the final point that I wanted to raise, around facilities, you indicated that one of your major challenges is the inability to appoint consultants. Now, you know that the usage of consultants is becoming more and more looked upon unfavorably in government. So if you're saying that you cannot appoint consultants, therefore there might be a challenge on facilities, what are our plans in light of the fact that consultants and the continued engagement is something that's frowned upon? I'm asking this question because it's not going to be an excuse that you're going to get away with forever. If we say that we're not going to appoint consultants anymore, then it means the department must find an alternate way of doing that. Or if it means you're going to go and ask for compensation on that one, or Treasury has the skills to do what consultants, just what is it that you're going to do? You can't come to us and say to us, well, we can't appoint consultants, therefore the work stops with the department. You could respond to those questions in any order, and then we'll remind you on those that you have not responded to, if there are any. And anybody could respond on that.
No, thanks. Thanks, Chair. I can't help but observe that unavoidably, as the year goes, you are learning more about the committee's expectations. About my overall sense was that this is one of those most very elaborate reports that has got way. But of course, there are still gaps, and I hope as time goes, we'll keep on improving on what we do. But, Chair, around the last question that you raised, the idea has been in the course of the last 2 years and going into the future, and almost like a year to go from now, has been to be able to augment our capacity as a department to improve our performance around facilities much more than we did in the previous year, with a view to begin to do better and possibly to take over functions that are resident elsewhere. And so the process of going there will unavoidably overlap with the formulation of full-time capacity. But we want to do this now. This capacity must be there. And so the sense has been to appoint people on contract whilst you're developing the structure with a view to fill those positions once the structure has been approved. And hence we required some excess capacity that will have come in the form of contract employees. We have discovered ourselves that when we do and when we push hard for our construction projects, and get directly involved as opposed to being dependent on, that you are able to save quite a lot of money by engaging the contractors directly around the estimates that they will often provide to Public Works. And there are a number of examples that we can provide to demonstrate where we have generated savings by direct involvement. With that benefit, we felt the need to develop our own internal capacity on contract basis as we finalize the structure, which is something that will be done in due course. Around the issues of the 100% compliance, Chair, we will arrive at 100% compliance, and that will most probably be one of those reports that we're able to provide in the last quarter of the year. Because we improve the targets as we go and deal with the backlogs as we get. But if you have to remember, the point I'm really making is that in the strategic plan, the point we're making is that everybody with a sentence above 24 years as new, as 24 months, oh yes, as new admissions, and everybody left with 24 months before consideration for parole, want to reach 100% in respect of that. Unavoidably, in respect of these two things, there is a population in between. There is a population in between that serves as a backlog. We're hoping to catch them up on the last 24 months, but to make sure that as we deal with the first 24 months, that we're able to address the backlog and catch up with these other ones. Otherwise, the population is just way too big for our capacity. And so it's a matter of a decision on our part about how do we make sure that we could comply with the requirements of the Act, recognizing the capacity problems that we have. So we'll hit by the end of the year, because we don't have a choice. We'll hit by the end of the year. Everybody in the last 24 months must be considered for parole. So you'll have a sentence plan, you'll have, and then there is this targeted area of the all the new entrants that we want to deal with before we generate the backlog around them. And the same really applies. The offender labor. You recall that in our strategic plan we have a specific target, and so as you go and move, we're improving our quantum achievements quarter by quarter until such time that we can be able to reach that specific target. And hence, in this specific report, we're able to say to you, these are the actual numbers of people. And if we're looking at those numbers against the actual people to whom we provide job opportunities, but to look into those specific numbers against the target that you have set in the ENE and the strategic plan, you'll see that we're closing up that gap as we go. That is one set of things. But the other set of things here that we have done in the face of the discussions we had in the previous court, we have come to a complete realization ourselves that we need to overhaul the whole issue of provision of labor. And this really has been as a result of the impetus of the discussions that we have had with you in the first court, to overhaul the system and increase these numbers. So I'm really hoping that what you're going to see going forward is us saying we're increasing and exceeding the target, so that we are able to provide more labor opportunities to more inmates than we otherwise targeted. I hope that we'll be able to exceed that target as we go forward. But I'm saying that we're chasing the target, which is an annual target, and we're improving the numbers at the management area as we go. And so we're building on the previous year and the previous quarter, every next quarter as we go forward. Thanks.
Chairperson, can I just deal with the issue around the internal audit and the inspectorate, and then I'll ask Acting CDC Development and Care to deal with some of the issues relating to some of the issues around workshop projects, and perhaps the CFO to speak on asset management, or Mr. Ngubo. The issue that is being raised is not so much in relation to the inspecting judge, but in relation to the internal inspectorate, which is a requirement of the Act in terms of Section 95 of the Act. We have to have a service evaluation capacity. Part of what we have been aiming to see is that internal audit and inspection are not actually focusing their energies on the same element, so that we get the best value added management to ensure that, because both of them are driven in terms of their focus by the risk profile of the department, by issues that have emerged in the AG's report, by issues that have come out of scope of interaction. But we want to be able to ensure that we're not landing up where they are focusing on the same issues. So it's a management process there in terms of the coverage of those two entities, and trying to ensure that we get a value add from both angles. Part of our concern is that we can also land up in a situation in which the AG goes to a management area, internal audit goes to a management area, inspectorate goes to a management area, a line functional branch goes to a management area on a monitoring visit, and you actually land up where a manager is so bombarded by being audited in the broadest sense of auditing, that the scope to actually be able to act on the findings of those audit reports or the inspection reports becomes quite limited. So we're trying to manage that process going forward. So I hope that gives some clarity on that issue.
Sorry. The issue of the factory that has been, that is in Central Bank, that was raised by Honorable Mr. Fisher. It is a factory that was burned down due to electricity problems. And there was an investigation that was going on, and it was completed sometime late last year. And now, we are sitting with two issues then. There is the issue of artisans that are resigning to greener pastures. And there is also an issue of the scarce of artisans in the country, and it becomes a little bit difficult, to employ them. But it's a matter, particularly now in the face of the budget cuts, it becomes a little bit of a challenge to employ more artisans, because there are also other professions that are prioritized at this stage, like the nurses, the teachers, and others. But I think it's a matter that we are looking at.
Now, let me raise the question that I think the Fisher was asking. He was saying that in many of your facilities, there are structures called factories or workstations or so on, and many of them are white elephants. In other words, they're not being utilized, not that specific one. His question was, what is the degree of unutilized factory space, if I could use that word. You go to Boksburg and you'll find a facility that can bake bread, or you go to Malmesbury and you find a facility that can make uniforms. And we get there and people say, well, we can't really make uniforms because of this or that or the other. The question is, how pervasive is that across the country? Or are we utilizing all our facilities to their maximum? And if not, I guess his question is, why is it not the case? I don't know if anybody wants to attempt answering that question.
Chairperson, as I said, the factory that I know at this stage that has been on standstill without, utilized, is that one of Central Bank. But I know there are some, there is a lack of artisans, because for a factory to operate, you must have an artisan that will take about 8 inmates. With the scarcity of the artisans at this stage, then you'll find some of the portions of the fact are closed down because of the lack of that skill. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. You want to help us further on that particular one? Or on another one? All right. Mr. Fisher, are you comfortable with the response? Yes. For your mic, sir.
The question of these workshops, it is something that we have been harping on, that there must be workshops in all the provinces where all inmates are able to do work so that they are skilled on many of them. Seemingly, there's a shortage of them right through the country. That's what I was trying to say. It's only in certain areas that we find them. Yeah.
Right, that's something that you would need to respond to. Do you want to attempt to respond to that one, sir?
Not
to that one. Okay. I'm saying the point is made. And I think it ties up with the point of trying to get as many inmates as possible out of the cells doing some meaningful work for the day. So it's something that I think the department must look at. If we could carry on to the others, let me remind you, asset management and the challenges faced with it, what is causing confusion of the 7 days establishment, and your vehicle.
Thank you, Chairperson. On asset management, the Honourable Member asked what is the fellow wrong with regard to asset management within the department. We do have, Honourable Chair, some challenges with regard to first the challenges emanated from us using different systems, something that was successfully addressed, though piecemeal within one financial year, which is 2008-09. Effective this financial year, we have one asset register, one asset system in the department. But the remnants of that problem that we had, different systems not interfacing, have been carried through the 9-10 financial year. So we had a challenge of supporting documentation with regard to adjustments that were passed through in terms of the opening balances. And also, if you look at the asset reconciliation, we are now monthly reconciling the assets, but the challenge is actually correcting identified deficiencies. So what you would have is all regions are now submitting their monthly reconciliations by the 20th of the month to national office. But then in the process of reconciliation, you find that there's a deficiency that must be corrected. But now what we're having is that backlog piling up because those deficiencies are not actually corrected. In our analysis, we do the reason that some of these deficiencies are not corrected, though we did offer training twice, in fact, for all the relevant officials. But we do have a serious challenge with regard to the people that are entrusted to the function of asset management. These are not financial people by profile and all that. We try as far as possible to actually supplement the training, train them. But others, even just basic skills that would have expected at that particular level is quite lacking. And in certain instances, there has been a migration process that has happened, and therefore the people that were there are not anymore there. So it's one thing that as we migrating support people to Public Service Act as a department, though currently we've got financial constraints in terms of trying to ensure that we fully migrate the support functions to Public Service Act appointments. But it's one thing that looking at the caliber of people that deal with asset management and finances of the department, we need to seriously look at that because it wouldn't help us. It really wouldn't help us to take someone who has for all his life been trained on security matters and just deploy that person to do your asset reconciliation. So that's another major issue that we currently have. Another challenge that we're dealing with is the movement of assets such that whatever is physically there ties exactly to our asset register. We have challenges there. But again, when we analyze the monthly reports, we find that basically the lack of capacity just comes up because the classifications, you'd find that an asset that is supposed to be classified as a major asset and a minor asset, those definitions are not properly followed up. There was a training that the Treasury had promised that they will facilitate for all government departments having moved to the new standard chart of accounts. We had identified about 750 people that had to be trained. But unfortunately, they have reverted back to us as the department that they can only train 28 out of the 750. And that training is paid for, is conducted by Palama, and in the current budgetary consensus of the department, it's going to be a very serious challenge. Of the 28 already, some have already gone to the first phase of the training, it's an accredited training certificate, because we've identified it doesn't help us to train people, just go and attend training once to assess competences. So that at the end of the day, after the training, they're certificated, but they can be able to execute the job. Score for us training is quite critical in the reconciliation and correcting the deviations, because through that training, they'll be able then to fully understand the definitions and the classification, therefore avoid a lot of misclassification that is currently there in our asset register. We will continue, Chairperson, even in the absence of big numbers being trained as we would have desired, to actually, as a department, continue to do on-the-job kind of a training, so as far as possible to have some value in that. The asset verification part, we said we're not going to be waiting for the annual asset verification to be conducted. That will be done now. We've already started in head office to do the asset verification, and we've written regions that everyone by end of November must have done the asset verification, so that by the time we close the financial year, we're definite that at least the physical assets
and the asset register, they do talk. And where assets have been moved, those assets are assigned, or if ever it's a permanent movement, the asset register is actually then kind of amended so that we can have full accountability of all our assets within the department. On the question of who actually controls these assets, the control room of assets in DCS is decentralized. Managers are appointed as asset controllers. So if in my case I've got tables, chairs and all that, I would have received a delegation that I'm responsible in terms of Section 45 of the PFMA to actually manage all the resources under my care, and therefore I do have in my own office asset register, of which when the supply chain management practitioners come for physical asset verification, they compare that with the actual asset register that is there in the system. And any deficiencies, I must be able to account where is the difference. And we do have challenges, because some of these issues may not even have been raised at the time of audits by Auditor General. If, as asset controllers, in other words, management down to the lowest level, we're doing our part. In terms of monthly monitoring, all managers in DCS are supposed to be holding what you call financial meetings, and part of the agenda of the financial meeting is accountability on asset management. So that's why I'm saying that if all of us were doing exactly in terms of following that kind of a framework, some of these challenges would have been minimized. But it's something that we enforce and reinforce, and we have actually said management must now account back where they are holding those meetings in terms of being able to have a better accountability within the department. We can't centralize asset management because these assets are within centers, within offices, and so forth. But that role as head office we do play. But unfortunately, we do have serious challenges, Chairperson, in terms of capacity at a professional level. On that, I'll hand over to Mr. Ngo.
Mr. Ndaka, are you comfortable? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of the vehicles, in the first quarter, we had nationally 3,999 vehicles. On the second quarter, we had we have now 4,006,000 vehicles. And the number of uneconomical vehicles in the first quarter was 1,655, and in the second quarter, it's 1,891. And the maintenance cost of these vehicles, it's for the first quarter, it was 25,685,294, and in the second quarter, it is 27,880,158,000. What has been happening is that...
Sorry, did you say 28 million rand?
I can round it off.
Yeah. Like no, that's fine. Just, did you get the maintenance cost for the vehicles were?
For the second quarter, it's 27,880,158. That is the maintenance cost of these vehicles. Some vehicles have been replaced, although there was no allocation that was given in terms of the budget so that we can replace vehicles. But what has been happening is that there has been some vironment from other programs that have been slow in procurement, and then rather than returning money towards the end of the financial year to Treasury, what the regions have done, they have procured vehicles to replace those that are actually at a bad state so that they can get better vehicles. But there has not been any allocation budget-wise so that we can have a big replacement of vehicles.
We'll give you the first bite, Ms. The originator of the question, I know that Mr. Self wants to, it's on this one, isn't it, Mr. Self? And then we'll take it from there. But yes, Mr. Abram.
Chair, the question was, how do you determine that a vehicle needs to be replaced? It's based on mileage, based on the fact that it was misused, badly handled, or whatever. Secondly, Chair, if one looks at a fleet of approximately 4,000 and in the second quarter, slightly more than 4,000 vehicles, what is your breakdown? Well, if you take 25 million and you are able to maintain 4,000 vehicles, what is your cost per vehicle in terms of maintenance? That's what we would like to know. And then I've asked that in order to replace those vehicles that are obsolete or that are unable to perform the duty for which they were originally purchased, what is your budget to replace them? What is required? I'm pleased to hear that there were vehements and you utilized it in order to remain mobile. But then one needs to know what is your requirement.
Just on the subject of vehicles, I understand that the department's short of money and I understand that they can't replace vehicles. But one of the drivers of, I think, making sure that we get value for money is making sure that those vehicles aren't used unnecessarily or for trivial purposes. And therefore, you know, it surprises me because somebody phoned me last night to say that there's a vehicle registration number IFPF 279NW, a black Ford Focus, departmental vehicle, in Heralds Bay, in near George. Now, as far as I know, there isn't a correctional center in Heralds Bay, and this was at 7 o'clock yesterday evening, and I just wondered what steps the department was taking to ensure that the vehicles that are used for official purposes only and are not used outside of those official purposes. Because, I mean, clearly, if you're facing a crisis in this respect, the controls on the use of vehicles must be even stricter than they might ordinarily be.
Well, maybe I'm slow today. I want to ask the question again. You mentioned a figure of 27 million rand for maintenance of vehicles. Is that just for the quarter? Year to date. So the 27 million is from the 1st of April to today. Okay. All right. Now, I just wanted to ask that question because I'm saying, again, I don't want to be a prophet, but if we looked at it, we're talking about 50 million rand for the year for maintenance. If it's 27 million for 6 months, we're looking at about 50 million rand a year. Have you, as a department commissioner, looked at that figure, 50 million rand just for maintenance versus what that could buy in terms of a new car that could last us or the maintenance costs be reduced? I'm just asking the question. 50 million rand for maintenance, I don't know, maybe seems excessive for me, but I'm just raising the question. But let's respond to those two questions first that have been raised, and then we will, or then you can respond to all of them.
Sorry, Chair, there's a misunderstanding. I understood that the first quarter cost was 25 million. The second quarter cost was 27,880,000 or something. I say it's 28 roughly. That gives you for 6 months 53 million rand for 6 months. If you transpolate it to another 6 months, it will be over 100 million. Now, my computer is not functioning today, my calculator, but I would have loved to know if anybody's got a calculator here, where you divide 25 million by 4,000 vehicles, what is the per capita cost over a quarter?
We'll get to that one. I think you must first clarify this. It's unfortunate I don't have it here. The first thing that you must clarify is what is your maintenance cost year to date on vehicles? Is it 27 plus 25? Is it cumulative 27 to date? What is your maintenance cost? I think that's the first question you have to ask. And then, Ms. Reiner, you then respond. If it's 100 million for 6 months, is it really the route to go? Is there something else? But if there seems to be lack of clarity of my understanding when I asked you the question, you said the 27 million was year to date cost. So that addresses it then. That's fine. It's a year to date cost. Thanks. If you could respond to the others.
Yes, the displacement is based on the mileage of the vehicle, that would determine that its lifespan is over and it should be replaced, unless it is involved in an accident and it's written off. And we are participating in a contract which is First Auto. Most of the departments are participating on that contract, which actually give monthly reports in terms of the mileage and the general condition of the vehicles, and so that we can actually monitor its usage and all that. But looking at the level of mismanagement and the abuse of the vehicles, we wanted to participate to a full management of vehicles due to many challenges that we were facing. First one being officials issued with vehicles without proper authorization of the trips, or finding that the very officials that are entrusted with the responsibility of managing vehicles, they are the very same ones that are abusing the vehicles. Looking at that, and also the stealing of parts of the vehicles, find that the vehicle is bought today, the next day it does not have wheel caps. You want to follow up, who is responsible for that? Nobody knows. We're saying that we need to stop that and look at participating in this contract, which is actually managed by the Department of Transport. We requested to participate in it, and our request was disapproved due to the fact that we would participate with a big fleet. So that would sort of constitute another bit in terms of the budget that would be involved in the management of about 4,000 fleets. They said, you rather start your own process. So right now the department is in the process of getting a feasibility study, a study that would say, if we carry on with the current management of vehicles, is there any value continuing that way? Or should we actually go to that route of getting another service provider to manage it on our behalf? And the officials that would be involved in that would be the Department of Transport. They would be using their skills, but also National Treasury has indicated that for that purpose of doing that study, they would actually fund 50% of the cost. The other cost will come from the department. Then getting the report from there, they typically indicate what should we do or which areas do we need to focus on if we need to actually manage the vehicles in a proper way, because I must indicate that it is a big challenge at the moment. Not so much about stealing. In the first quarter, we had one theft. In the second quarter, we had two vehicles stolen. The figure is not accumulative. Just one in the second quarter, it was two. But the abuse of the vehicles, that is the challenge. And the biggest challenge on it is actually the cover-up that is there after the abuse, that you find that you have got to dig deep to find what actually happened, and it takes a lot of time to do that. Those are the challenges that we are mentioning. The issue that has been mentioned by Honourable Member about that FKP 279, NW Ford Focus that was in Herald, we will have to investigate that and find out what happened to issue the vehicle, because it looks like a Northwest registration. Was that a trip properly authorized? What were they doing there? It's something that we are going to take it up. The budget that we had been, it's two financial years now consecutive where we have not received any budget for replacement of vehicles, initially we thought that this process of getting us to participate in the contract was not going to be long or was not going to be delayed. But there was a lot of delays from the Department of Transport. As a result, the second financial year caught up with us, and we were not sure whether we would be accepted or not. As a result, there was no allocation. Now, we are sitting with a lot of old vehicles, but I must say that other regions are actually trying to manage that within the budget that they have. Where they don't have pressures, they replace those vehicles that are beyond the use. But of course, the biggest challenge is properly managing the fuel that is there in terms of the abuse.
We commend you, sir, for at least being open with those challenges. And then also for the previous speaker on the assets. Now that we understand it, we won't put our foot off the pedal, but at least we'll be more understanding. And we will raise them as well. I mean, there's no ways that somebody can take wheel caps and tires and engines off a vehicle and put it onto my private car at home and then get the department to go and replace it. It's something that you look at. It's good you brought it to our attention. We will look at it very closely as well. I think we're satisfied with that, but I see Mr. Abraham. We need to move on to the last one. Somebody needs to explain the confusion statement. But Mr. Abraham, do you want to deal? You'll be the last one.
No, Chair, we haven't had a response on what I specifically heard was that it was $25 million for the first quarter and $27.8 million for the second quarter.
Yeah, laat ik het rechtstel in Afrikaans. Die bedrag is 27 miljoen vir die jaar. 27 miljoen. No, year to date. From April until now. So it's not 27 plus 25. Cumulatively it's been 27. So that's what I'm understanding from the department. That is the cumulative figure. You want to talk on vehicles still, man? We want to move on to the last one in the next presentation, but let me allow you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to know from the department, when did you last notice the mismanagement of the vehicles? These millions we are talking about are for the maintenance only. You are saying to us the biggest challenge is a proper management. How? So to me, Moss, it seems as if you are starting a new department. Everything, it's new, everything. You only notice now that the mismanagement of the vehicles. You know, everything is new. That is why, Chairperson, I would like to know, when did they last notice this mismanagement of this vehicle? I don't understand you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If you look at our annual report, the last 3 years, part of the qualification was the management of vehicles. We have worked hard on it, so it's no longer a bullet in the annual report. Although the challenges are still there, but we have tried to control it. So we have been aware that there were problems in it, and we tried to stop it. But the problem hasn't disappeared completely. That's why I'm saying it. Although it does not appear as part of the qualification of asset management now, but there are still problems, which means that if we don't manage properly, it may actually elevate to that level as well.
I think I'm covered. I was just going to indicate that this is an issue that has been on our agenda and will remain on our agenda for a substantial period of time.
The confusion caused around the establishment of 7 days or two shift system?
Thanks, Chairperson. No, I think we've just started implementing the new shift system in July, it took root effectively around August or so, and the speed with which we were implementing the understanding of people on how to implement, and also an element of resistance in some areas, not necessarily that it has created the confusion. So these are the matters that we are dealing with. As we deal with the challenges in our presentation for the 7 day, we also mention these issues. So I think it's the speed with which we are. That's why in some areas it's moving very slow. It's not really taking place. In others, it's moving much faster. So I think it's those issues. Thanks.
We're on top of the confusion, in other words. We're addressing it. Thank you very much. Can we then move on to the financial presentation?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Starting from slide 37 of the presentation. For the period ended 30th of September 2009, we had an adjusted budget of 13.8 billion. We had spent by end of September 6.5 billion, and unspent funds for the remainder of the financial year were 7.3 billion rounded, making us to, in terms of percentage, to spend 47.27%. On slide 38, we are actually indicating the status of expenditure of the program, starting with program administration, that if you look at the revised budget for program administration, we had spent 50% against the revised budget of 49%, thus overspending. Most of the programs, Honorable Chair and members, you will find that they were reporting an over expenditure for the period ending September, because of the implementation of the OSD in the department, as the National Action Commissioner had indicated. This was the OSD for correctional officials, and correctional officials in the department that reside in all the programs. But the magnitude of this over-expenditure was zero from program to program. Up to end of September, we did pay the 7,500 once-off amount that was payable to the correctional officials for the back pay. Those, in terms of the resolution, the OSD for correctional officials was supposed to have been effected in July 2008. So the agreement with organized labor was that we are not going to do that. In fact, as government, there's a lot of savings in us having just given them once-off, 7,500 to all the members that were qualifying in terms of the set criteria. In terms of program security, on slide 39, same issue, an over expenditure, mainly because of OSD and security program. That's where the most of our members are in terms of the breakdown of membership within DCS. On slide 40, program corrections, again, we had an over expenditure there. Because of implementing the OSDs, I've indicated that most of these programs, mainly it is the compensation of employees that is affected. Program care, there we had an under expenditure. Program care is the program that houses the different skills, mainly in the health fraternity, the nurses, the doctors, the psychologists, pharmacists, and so forth. Mainly, if you look at program care, our problem, Honorable Chair, becomes the clearance of internal charges, because the nutrition program is housed under program care, and the time lag in terms of the issuing of food from stores and the accounting part thereof, normally we've got that time lag, and that affects the actual reporting for that particular month. So you have a snowball effect in terms of that. I think we had previously reported to this committee the department's exercise of relooking at internal charges, mainly within government, especially at national level. We are one department that still accounts in the manner that we are accounting. We benchmarked with several departments that manages big stores, like SAPS, even in provinces, the health department, just to see to it what is the best model within government that in terms of the transfer systems that are applied would assist us in terms of fully accounting and better managing internal charges within
sectors, in fact, on program development. Again, program development, we had an understanding. So program development and program care, that's where the bulk of internal charges would be, because program development does have workshops for production, and therefore the requisitioning of material once those are produced and all that, and therefore the billing to other departments once they're sold, and the clearance in terms of that those stores does have issues in terms of the time lags. Program social reintegration, over expenditure mainly because secondary to security, this is the second biggest in terms of the number of officials that are housed in that particular program because of the implementation of OECD within the period under review. And in terms of program facilities and under expenditure, we do have challenges, Honorable Chair, mainly in program facilities, and it is more of a trend year to year in terms of the first three quarters of the financial year that we've got low expenditure in terms of the capital works program, because we depend on public works billing the department and therefore reinvest in public works in terms of what they've built us. What is a trend is that sometimes the first month, April, there's no bill that comes to the department. If you look at our IYM, you'd find that there's nothing that we've paid. Then we get some invoices in May and so forth. And even those, they don't come in a very organized manner. And at times, I think the last year, overall there was an improvement in terms of program facilities. After so many years, we would return money back to Treasury because of the problems that we had with public works. But we find that now the billing improves in the last quarter of the financial year. And that's the part, the dependency part that we become the challenge in us properly managing the payments under facilities. If I may go, Honorable Chair, to slide 43. In terms of the GFS classification, on compensation of employees, we have overspent, mainly because of the implementation of the OECD for correctional officials. We had, in terms of the projections, once the resolution was signed, we had engaged the two departments, CPSA and National Treasury, and the main effect after the resolution was signed, we didn't have that money, as National Commissioner Acting has indicated. We had to look within the budget of DCS to be able to meet the obligations of Resolution Number 2 of 209, which is the OECD for correctional officials within the department, both in finding the once-off amount and also in terms of the carry-through effect once we've implemented the revised notches for the officials. And that exercise alone had warranted us to do some violence that were in our adjusted ENE, and also within the composition of employees and GFS classification, to actually reprioritize and see where can we make money to be able to finance that. In terms of the transfers and subsidies, again, an understanding on slide 44. But mainly in terms of transfers and subsidies, because mainly that's where we pay the gratuities for offenders and also the gratuities on attrition of our own members. Sometimes we would have some disparities comparatively from quarter to quarter, depending on how many people left the system by that particular quarter. And in terms of the payments for capital assets, as I've indicated, grossly underspending there because of the billing problems we are currently experiencing. We've been experiencing that over the years, so it's just, though, as I've indicated, that there is improvement comparatively, but quarter to quarter, we have challenges. We see improvement normally in our analysis in the last quarter. In the adjusted ENE, Honorable Chair, we received an additional amount of 595 million. We had requested an additional amount of 667 million from National Treasury. That left us with an underfunding from what we requested of 72 million. That's why in this presentation we're showing that there is a projected over expenditure. The 667 million that we requested, the 414 million of that 667 million was to supplement the budget for OSDs. I'm saying OSDs because there are other, we should call smaller OSDs within the department that had to implement that for the legal practitioners, For, for,
for medical doctors, educators, social workers, and so forth. Those for us by Renzulu are a small amount, others 1 million, 19 million, and so forth. So our biggest OSD is the one for COs. The other 253 million was the to supplement the budget for the general salary adjustments that were effective July 2009. We had in our baseline an average of 7% that was put in the baseline over the 2009 financial year. But in actual fact, when the resolution number 5 was signed with organized labor, the agreed average increase was 11.5%. So we had a shortfall of 4.5%. Hence, we then made the costing and requested that additional amount of money to National Treasury. The other amount in terms of the 595 adjusted ENE amount, we've got an amount that every year would be additionally appropriated to the department from the amount of money that we've collected for hiring out offender labor. So the agreement with National Treasury is to say the previous year in 89, if we have collected 3 million, one third of that will be appropriated back to DCS for us to supplement the gratuities we're paying to offenders who actually are offering offender labor. So what we had collected the previous year was about 2039 million, and a third of that was 813,000, which was additionally appropriated. So year on year, you always see that additional appropriation for offender hiring out of offender labor. And the amount in total does, is not diverted elsewhere. The total amount that is additionally adjusted for offender hiring out of offender labor goes straight again to supplementing the gratuities for offenders. So we do not direct that money for any other purpose. What we're indicating was slide 46, but I think events have overtaken that slide, is that the bill was to be presented to Parliament. And I must indicate, Chairperson, if you look at the adjusted appropriation for DCS, quite a significant amount was via means. Because in the process of us realizing that we do not have this amount of money for supplementing the OSD budget, we had to reprioritize. And that reprioritization really was not saying all else is insignificant. We fully conscious that all appropriated money is significant for the purpose it was appropriated. But given the immediate cost pressure of the OSD, those hard choices had to be made. And in that regard, we had to actually have some very tightening exercises. But I must indicate that ordinarily, if you recall, I think past 2-3 years, government has had the efficiency gains across government departments, and there was some kind of compulsory budget cuts given the economic meltdown. So partly the adjust the environment impacted on what was not committed, what could have assisted in delivering the particular projects, but other parts was about us being more efficient. In other words, don't travel if there's no necessity to travel. Don't, you know, just try to tighten a little bit the belt and ensure that we get best value from whatever is still allocated or still remains within that those particular programs. So you may have issues because we had to take all money that was allocated at that stage when we were introducing the breast tightening that was allocated for the procurement of assets to actually direct that money through violence, basically saying that if we had to replace a computer, defer that. Not saying we are not in future going to do that, but we're saying the current crisis, just defer that. And in that regard, as National Commissioner was indicating, the NTF of the department, the revised one, because it was the first one with a series of bids, but the National Treasury following cabinet to say that given the economic crisis in the country, the departments cut down on their NTF bids, which we did as DCS. So the only bid that we sent to National Treasury for the 2010 now NTF was a bid on OSDs. In other words, a carry through. But these have been implemented, there are resolutions that are signed that we need to respect as government. And therefore, what is the carry through going forward in the next MTF? So what went through to National Treasury was the bid for the implementation of the different OSDs and the phase two of the OSDs for correctional officials. And I must indicate that for 2010 only, the carry through for DCS impact will be about 1.8 billion additionally that we need to be having. So those are where we're sitting, hard kind of decisions that as a department we need to be making in terms of saying that how do we move forward without violating certain sections of the PFM in terms of overspending and still render the basic core services that we are mandated to be caring. And therefore, in the process of doing that, how to become more efficient and economic in terms of doing that. We indicating in the other slide, checking the figures on slide 47, the program, and I must apologize for slide 49. I think in the tracking, we didn't pull one of the cells that I said in press, but we'll just that one slide and send to Cicely. My apologies for that. Basically, that's that, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Any engagements on the financials of the department? Happiness? Mr. Sal?
Chair, just one question really related to the budget of facilities. When we last heard, the minister was still in the process of having a review of the new facilities, including the value for money review. And I just wondered whether the department was in a position to report where we are in that process, and whether it's likely that these contracts will go ahead or not, as the case might be.
Thank you very much. I also just have one question, not one question, just one comment to make. Ma'am, you raised the issue of service level between yourselves and DPSA. No, DPW, I beg your pardon. We are going to ask DPW to join us and you on the 2nd of February. Because we don't want a situation where at the end of March, you get a big bill, you pay it, and then we accuse you of fiscal dumping when it's not your responsibility. So all issues around service level agreements with DPW, because in our interaction with them, they give us a different story. They've said to us that you are partly to blame for some of these problems. So we'll put both departments together on the 2nd of, or the 10th of February, or 9th of February, so that you can accuse each other in front of each other. Be warned, 9th of February. If you then could answer the question around the possibility of utilizing the money for the contracts for the prisons that Mr. Sal raised.
Chairperson, I think we would need to get back in terms of the actual time frame. Obviously, the minister is in the midst of a process in regard to that, but I don't want to commit ourselves to exact time frames. We are very aware of the time frames, and we'll certainly be trying to manage the process so that we don't land up in problems in that regard. But at this point, there's not much more than I can say on that than to say that we are very conscious of the time frames in terms of the money.
I guess the point to make is that if we've got money budgeted for it and we're not going to use it in this financial year, is it not something that we must consider to divert, as opposed to having an over expenditure and the excuse being we had it there because we were planning to do this, never materialized because we never got EIAs or because the minister didn't finalize, and therefore we're asking for a rollover. I think that's the point that Mr. South is making.
Thanks, Chairperson. If you look at our NTF for 209, the money for the new triple P's is on the outer year, which is 2011-12, because that's where we had projected that the facilities would be completed and therefore government making a 50% down payment. So it's not this financial year. So the impact is still to come.
Thank you very much. Can we move to the next one? We've got an hour left. We're going to move much quicker because I think we would have covered most of the base in here, but I thought we were going to look at the establishment of the 7-day, is it? Yeah. Somebody could briefly take us through that for information and we'll ask questions if we need to. Very briefly, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll be brief indeed because the Commissioner has covered most of the groundwork around the issues of the 7-day. Maybe I should just go straight to slide 3, just to indicate the mandates that led to the situation we find ourselves as a department. The Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council Resolution 1 of 2007, on slide 3, that gave birth to the OSDs. And as part of the OSDs, then negotiations, we then signed Resolution 2 of 2009, which is the one that we are implementing. And various others are being signed in various sectors, sectoral bargaining councils for educators, health, engineering, and social services. And then as part of the implementation of the 7-day, it actually emanated from a resolution that was signed in 2005, but we deemed it fit that it should be linked to this to assist the department to move strategically in this area. So that's why the implementation has been linked to Resolution 2 of 2009. Yes. Can we move to the next? The commissioner has spoken to this area, maybe just a few areas of emphasis in terms of the principles where we have established two streams. If you look at our establishment, it mainly shows that all the staff is allocated to security. And the OSD provides for two streams, security and corrections, which is going to be focusing more on rehabilitation. So we are now going through the process of being able to create a balance between just security personnel and case officers that are required within the corrections field. Then if you go into bullet point number 2, just to emphasize the issue of the center-based and non-center-based, which provides for a differentiated salary package. The center-based, they work 45 hours, the officials that are center-based, 45 hours a week, and those who are in administration work 40 hours a week. Hence, we had to pay them an extra salary for the 5 hours that we are buying for them to be giving in the extra 5 hours. Then, just to go to the third bullet from the bottom, as a principle, the pay progression, it provides for a pay progression of 3%, which will be paid biannually based on performance, and it will start with effect from 2011. Currently, the assessment is done annually, and people get 1% pay progression. But generally in the public service, it has gone up to 1.5%, and we've agreed that we'll pay it over a period of 2 years. And that it would allow between notches 3%. When a person moves from one notch to the other, it would allow for a 3% increase. The last slide that provides for an advanced production stream, I think, is very critical for us as a department with in view of the challenges we face to employ the professionals. Here we're looking at being in a position to employ professionals, auxiliary, social workers, nursing assistants, and also counselors at a different entry level than any other correctional official in the department, or even looking at from the security stream, looking at advanced security people that would need, whether it's intelligence officers or people that will serve in our emergency support teams, and the entry level, because you require a certain level of skills and qualifications for those areas. They may not be professionals per se, but they would enter at a different level for our own retention programs. Then, Chairperson, I think I could just quickly skip the other slides and go to the numbers of officials that were actually paid on slide 6. If we could go to slide 6. We finally paid 38,546 officials on the OSD. I think the difference with our establishment there is because the other officials in the department are covered by the various OSDs. So that's why it's not balancing, just to highlight that area. The On slide 7, there's 519 officials who are on personal notices, which were not provided for in the translations that DPSA had provided in this regard. But that process is running now. All those translations have been provided, and there's a process of implementation running in the regions. On the payment of the 7,500, just to indicate that what was mandated was 307 million, and so far we've paid up to 284 million, just for the once-off. So we realizing that we're still operating within the mandated amounts that when we went for negotiations. Then just on the migration, Jefferson, because part of the process was that officials will be allowed to migrate with the intention of moving officials who are trained as correctional officials sitting in administration positions at head office or in regional offices to migrate to the centers to increase our numbers at the bottom. Out of all the officials, only 1,725 indicated their willingness to move from NEMS center-based, that is in administration, to center-based. Physically, we have been able to move only 383 because of what the commissioner had indicated of the vacancy levels that we have in administration. But we have made an arrangement that they would need at certain intervals to go and work the extra 5 hours to support the core business and go and work in centers. So just to highlight that area. As we are implementing Jefferson, we do would expect that there will be defaults. There will be areas where people would have certain errors in the capturing and so on. So we've instituted an auditing process where we ask the regions to do it themselves. And then we also did it from the personal director at National, going to the system to see where there were erroneous payments made, double payments, and short payments, and so on. And then the third level of the auditing is where we've engaged with internal audit to assist us. They are already busy with that process. By the end of the month, they will give us a report of what they've discovered in those areas. Then, indeed, we have had to put a process in place. There have been overpayments, and then we put a process to be able to recover. I think slide 11 just gives us an idea of the numbers of erroneous payments that were made and how the recovery of the costs went in that regard. So regions are proceeding. We are monitoring. We are having engagements with regions almost on a day-to-day basis to make sure that the recoveries are made. Some regions have made quick recoveries and closed the gaps. Others have been moving a bit slow, but we are monitoring that process, Jefferson. Just to ensure that all the money that's owed to the state is recovered and what we owe to our officials also gets paid to them. I won't go into the structures of governance. The commissioner has alluded to that in terms of monitoring. We're working both together with labor at the GPSSBC level to make sure that we manage the disputes that may arise out of implementation. But we're also working together with Treasury and DPSA to ensure that we are applying the principles and the directive correctly that has been issued for implementation, and that we also operate within the budget that has been mandated. So we've got that tripartite meeting that meet every month, and we produce a report for the mandate committee every month. In terms of communication, because this is a new process of communication with officials, various means of communication, we do send circulars out, but we have also created a web page with frequently asked questions just to assist members to post questions there and they get a response. But also from our communication side, we have a contact person where they also send in questions, and she forwards all of those to us for us to be able to deal with that. Moving, Chairperson, to slide 15 that deals with the implementation of the 7-day, as I indicated that all centers have implemented the 7-day work week, and this introduced the new shift system, the 2x12-hour shift. It's not applied consistently across the various regions and centers at this point in time. The introduction of the 7-day saw Saturday and Sunday becoming a normal working day. However, remunerating Sundays and public holidays differently in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act and also as a determination issued by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Then, due to challenges mainly of staffing, new shift system not fully implemented, as I indicated, element of resistance from some managers in regions, we're experiencing that, as you would see when we look at the table that we provided below, that regions like Western Cape, which we feel that is better resourced by than Eastern Cape, is making very slow progress in terms of movement. Only 9 of the 42 centers have moved. And when you look at the rest, Eastern Cape is still leading the rest of the regions, because only 3 are left for them to move to totally to the two-shift system. And Free State is also moving slow, I must say, Chairperson. Gauteng has started picking up speed. KwaZulu-Natal is the second leading region in terms of implementation with 34. Then Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest also picking up speed. They started very slow, but with Western Cape, it's still a mountain to climb. However, we are engaging, Chairperson. We have a plan of visiting the Western Cape and the national task team, the task team there established, so that we understand the details in, of what their challenges are. And our plan is that we should also maybe bring in some of the managers in the Eastern Cape, where they are making so much progress, just to share best practice in terms of how exactly do they get it right in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape can't get it right, as well as the Free State. There are delays in resolving different interpretation of some clauses of the OSD, as some of the general challenges we wanted to raise. The lack of funding for the OSD, I think the acting commissioner and our acting CFO spoke eloquently on that matter. The increasing incidence of sick leave during weekends, some of the regions are reporting that, because people were used to be off on weekends to go and do their own work, so they are now exploiting the weekends. The staff shortages reported as a major challenge, and moratorium on filling of vacancies that reduces staff capacity even further. Then there are inconsistencies in the application of the leave policy as detected, and the DPSA is being engaged in this regard in terms of giving us advice on the matter, Chairperson, because it's not only this department that's going to start implementing a 7-day work week. The police do, the nurses, health care provides that. So I think the lessons are there for us to learn. It's a question of just getting everybody on the same page. The issues of lack of funding to fill vacancies, particularly if we allow everybody to migrate to centers, those that are going to be appointed in terms of the Public Service Act to work in offices, there will be savings realized through that process, Chairperson, because the packages won't be the same, the uniform won't be there, and other matters for those that cost drivers, for those that are going to be appointed under the Public Service Act. The current study leave policy, regions are saying it's also exacerbating, But suffice to report that, Chairperson, that in our departmental bargaining council, we have agreed to reduce the number of days. Currently, for every paper a person writes, they get 5 days. So we have now we have dealt with that in the departmental bargaining council. All that's left is for us to get it to the GPSSBC for ratification. And now that all the negotiations on OSDs have been concluded, we'll be able to take the matter back for finalization in the negotiating and the bargaining council. Just to highlight a few of the benefits that we realize in Jefferson, center-based officials work 45-hour work week, which is aggregated over 2 weeks. Officials work normal hours in terms of the new shift system, and this age to be 4 days in and 3 days off to cover 96 hours in 2 weeks, instead of the 12 days in that officials have been working, which was very hard. And we're still worried that where the regions are not moving, that people are still subjected to working 12 days in flat out, and the only off they get is on weekends, and it's only Saturday and Sunday off that they will take. Whereas this new system allows them, like the nurses would do, they would be working in, and then they would have some time off. And we're getting a lot of feedback in terms of how that has impacted on the well-being and the welfare officials, because they now have quality of time with families and enough resting time, and this contributed positively to the reduction of absences and sick leave. Those where it's being implemented, the reports are that because people of the working the long days, 12 hours in, they would augment their off days by taking sick leave just to rest and so on. But in those areas where it's being implemented, it has dropped. And the absences have dropped on Mondays or Fridays and things like those. Then officials save on transport costs because they are not expected, if they are off for 3 days, they are not expected to be coming to work sometimes for 4 days. But we are getting the hours that we need to get out of them in the long run. So shifts now are scheduled mainly during times when public transport is available. If the shift starts at 6 o'clock, the majority of the shifts where people have moved, they start at 6 and end at 6 in the evening. It enhances compliance, as the commissioner indicated, with our legislation, the 3-meal system, because we've created more hours during the day. Even where people are saying there are staff shortages, our task team is still looking at that, because we've basically taken away the 2 shifts that were at night. At night, with our past shift system, people would work from morning 6 o'clock to 2 o'clock, and then others would come in from 2 o'clock to 10 o'clock, and we've got another shift from 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the morning. So we basically now have extended the day, and which in terms of compliance would assist the department. More time is created during the day to implement programs and work opportunities for offenders. And we're really hopeful that with that area of focus, with the creation of enough time, and in the pilot we did in Johannesburg, we realized that it's going to be able to provide enough time for offenders to be outside in workshops, in programs, and be able to do work. Created visible savings on overtime budget, as it indicates, Chairperson, in the table that we have provided. The department used to pay 103 million per month on overtime for weekends, which in terms of the last time we were looking at our projections when we were still paying overtime, it was around 1.2 billion per annum that we were just paying on overtime. Now it shows that as we are progressing with the implementation, there are reductions on the overtime, because the only amount that we pay now is for the payment, is for the shift, the shifts that fall over Sundays and public holidays, just a 0.5% of the rate that we must pay on Sundays, and 1%. That is a double shift, a double time, and a half time that we pay for those. So it has really reduced our overtime drastically. In July, we saw a reduction. We spent 89 million. We were still paying for the June because that's when our overtime worked. And then in August, it went down to 3 million. And then in September, 763. In October, 393. Because we are still expected to pay overtime if people work double shift in terms of Resolution 1 of 2007, or they work the extra hours, or it's abnormal overtime, we're still expecting that there would be money that we are paying. So we're seeing a reduction in terms of the payment of overtime, the direct effect of implementing the seven-day establishment. Right. So, Chairperson, I think the rest of the slides are just giving progress on the other OSDs. Maybe I could end here and then see whether there would be specific questions on the other OSDs, because as the acting CFO indicated, they are not quite huge for the department itself. Because our major investment is with correctional officials. That's where we've got big numbers. But if there are any questions around the other OSDs, we'd be able to take those questions. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, sir. Because this is work in progress, and clearly there's still much to be done. I think we will monitor it and asking lots of questions. But if there are questions of clarity, members can ask. Safe to say, from our side, we'd want you to move much faster with Western Cape and Free State, and we'd want to be kept on board if there are any slowdowns because of resistance. Clearly, it is something that would have to be implemented as uniformly as possible across the country. I'm not sure if members have any questions around OSDs. Happiness. Thank you so much. The last one would be, and also very briefly around the health. I'm not sure who's going to take us around. The health care delivery and management.
Chairperson, members of the committee, thank you. In terms of the first slide, those are the guidelines which govern the provision of healthcare services. Offenders must have the same access and quality and range of healthcare as those rendered to the community, and a person's capacity to access services should not be compromised because the person has been incarcerated. They do have the basic rights as all the community members. Next slide. Previously, before 1994, the Department of Health was responsible for the health care services of the offenders. In 1994, the nine provinces were created and no measures were put in place for the provision of personal health services to the offenders. From 1999, slide 5, the various provinces started to withdraw in their services from correctional services due to capacity limitations, and the department managed to enter into agreements with Western Cape and Gauteng, and other provinces indicated resource limitations. And with the transformation of health services, districts were established. DCS approached health to incorporate DCS into the districts. That was done, but it was never formalized from national health to the provinces, to the regions, to the districts. The purpose of the Directorate of Healthcare is to facilitate access, the provision of healthcare services, health, pharmacy, nutrition, personal, environmental health to all categories of offenders. The next slide. Those are the areas that we are providing: preventive, promotive, and curative care, rehabilitative, referral for secondary and tertiary levels of care, because we're providing primary health care, and discharge planning. And the next slide I'll skip because it's just a breakdown of the services that we are rendering. I'll go to slide number 12. Those are the service highlights. A number of policies have been approved. We've trained a number of healthcare professionals to equip them with the relevant skills and knowledge. And up to so far, 20 correctional facilities have been accredited
as comprehensive wellness sites to improve access to preventive care support and treatment of offenders. Health professionals also benefited from the OSD, as previously mentioned, participating in all the calendar events. And we also had a chance to present to the head of health, because DCS was not represented in the previous primary health care review committees and in the current boards, like the Mental Health Care Review Board, National Health Council, where most decisions that are affecting correctional services are taken. A presentation was made, and then two DGs agreed to take this process forward. And last month, the Department of Health and KwaZulu-Natal region signed a memorandum of agreement with Hospice South Africa to assist the department in providing palliative care, because we don't have capacity to render palliative care services. And we depended on PEPFAR funds, especially for TB and HIV activities. And with PEPFAR funds, we managed to train health professionals, procure equipment for most of our primary health care facilities, refurbish most of our identified facilities in preparation for accreditation. We also appointed a number of management area coordinators for HIV and AIDS. And there's some form of partnership established with the Department of Health at national and at the provinces and within the districts, especially with regard to communicable diseases, only TB and HIV and AIDS. But with the rest of the programs, the partnership is still lagging behind. A feasibility study into the outsourcing of pharmaceutical services has been finalized. The report has been submitted for a decision to be taken due to the challenges of appointing and retaining pharmacists. We're also implementing the headhunting framework for health professionals. And we also participated in a session with Gauteng to develop referral protocols, because in most instances, inmates are referred to and fro due to breakdown in communication. And the number of constraints is HR. The department is struggling to retain nurses, doctors, and pharmacists. And the turnover ranges from 1 day to a year. Sometimes the nurse comes one morning, the following morning the person resigns. Similarly to the pharmacies, the doctors only stay 2 to 3 weeks. They don't stay in the department. Next slide. There's the capacity of HR, nurses, doctors, pharmacists, nutritional services, environmental health. The biggest challenge is dietitians. And we refer to public health hospitals. They also have a shortage. We rely on private health facilities for the provision of the required services. Next slide. And in terms of services and programs, the lack of adequate resources impacts seriously on the management of all the diseases, especially the priority programs. TB being number one, chronic diseases, diabetes, hypertension, mental illness. And there's the biggest challenge to maintain positive clinical improvements, because instead of dealing with preventive and promotive care, we're dealing more with curative services where we require more medication, and that has got cost implications. The department can focus on outcome-based healthcare services. And there's an increase in the burden of diseases which are becoming complex to manage, like MDR, XDR, and AIDS, and limited access to ARVs. And in terms of legislation, most of the legislation has impact on healthcare delivery. Example, the Mental Health Care Act requires inmates to be incarcerated in designated institutions, and correctional services health facilities do not meet criteria for designation. And the Criminal Procedure Act has been amended. All observation cases, one panel observation cases, are now going to be conducted in correctional services. That's going to have a huge impact on the observation cases and impact also on the judicial processes. And the roles and responsibilities of the Department of Health and provinces is not clear up to so far, but it seems the Minister of Health and Minister of Correctional Services will be meeting in due course to find who's responsible for what in terms of healthcare delivering DCS.
Although the Health Act prescribes that the Minister of Health is responsible for the health care of the offenders, there's still some misunderstanding on this area. The biggest challenge is lack of adequate trained nurses in primary health care. Because if we were having nurses trained in primary health care, we wouldn't be needing pharmacists and doctors, or we would need them to a very limited degree. The more we train them, the more they leave the department. And their licensing is also a challenge, because the department needs to have a full-time medical doctor to license, to issue that nurse with a license. Where we use private medical practitioners, they're not allowed in terms of the various acts to license nurses where they're not working. And in terms of the target population, overcrowding has a huge impact on healthcare delivery. And the type of offenders that we incarcerate, high turnover of awaiting trials, limited self-care opportunities due to the environment that healthcare delivery has to be provided in. And those are some of the challenges: IT, transport issues, infrastructure. And those are the bed capacities. We didn't include the occupancy rates because they differ from management area to management area. Next slide. And the constraints that we are experiencing with DOH, there's lack of policy on licensing of nurses with primary health care, inability to have doctors and dentists to DCS, requirements for DCS to pay for ARVs and TB medication, because when the country budgets requests for donor funds, they use the total population of South Africa to request for funds. And when these funds are received, they are distributed to the provinces, and the provinces will say these are for community members and not for inmates. And the lack of access to drugs leads to complications and drug resistance, especially TB. In one management area, we had a challenge where for 6 months we couldn't have access to TB drugs continuously. And there's no specialist to provide secondary and tertiary levels of care, because we have to refer to community hospitals. Community hospitals have to refer to first levels of care, and then the others have to refer to academic hospitals. And turnaround times for laboratory results is a huge challenge. Correctional services was part of the TB review by World Health Organization. They realized that it sometimes takes 6 months for DCS to receive TB results. And this also is receiving attention. We had a meeting last week with the cluster, the relevant cluster, they are giving that attention. And there's also lack of adequate capacity to admit state patients and observation cases. So this results in observation cases spending 2 years in correctional services without being observed. And referral systems I've spoken about, and inability to admit MDR and XDR TB patients. They have to be kept within correctional facilities without proper ventilation, ultraviolet lights, etc., etc. And these are some of the measures that the department is looking at and implementing to address some of the challenges. We are continuously training nurses in PHC and management of clinical conditions and facilitation of their licensing where there's permanent medical doctors. And risk mitigation plans are implemented for pharmaceutical services and HIV. We've included TB because HIV and TB co-infections. And the department has to look at creating posts based on the primary healthcare staffing models, because the current models are impacting negatively on the provision of healthcare services. Next slide. The relationships that are continuing, alignment of health systems to be able to monitor the outcome and output indicators, and proposal to create communicable disease coordinators, because communicable diseases are starting to increase in correctional services due to proper coordinating systems. Next slide. Thank you, Chairperson and committee members.
I'm sorry that we had to rush you, ma'am, but I'm going to canvass the committee, but just sitting and listening, I think we need a much more
intense discussion around this matter. Health is one of the key focus areas of the last State of the Nation address and government's focus areas. Health was one of them. And clearly we're not going to do justice to this today, so I'm going to ask Cindy and the committee to try and slot a time where we deal with this thing in much more detail. What is your relationship with the Department of Health in the regions and nationally? When there's an outbreak of measles in Joburg Prison, and you don't have the, if you're saying to me you don't have funds for anything else, and we won't have a situation where you don't have funds to buy the necessary vaccinations or vaccines. So I'm saying these things are too crucial and are too critical to be left until we have a crisis on our hands. So we are going to ask you through the National Commissioner to come back at some point, that we have a more in-depth discussion around exactly what the best way is in terms of ensuring that health is health for the whole of South Africa and not just for those of us that happen to be outside of incarceration. And also the relationship between the minister. I do know that the minister and the minister of health were having some sort of discussion, certainly around the measles outbreak in Johannesburg a couple of weeks ago. So let's look at it globally. But we are going to call you back. We are going to look at it. I'm hoping that members don't interrogate it now, but it's too important a subject for us not to be on top of. We will call you back in the next quarter. If not at the quarterly meeting, certainly between the quarter, we'll call you back so that we have a more in-depth discussion around health and care for inmates. Ms. Reiner.
Chairperson, I think we would welcome that. What I want to just reflect is that in that process, we have had convened by the Minister a health round table with not only the Department of Health, but a whole range of stakeholders within the health environment. And that process has now resulted in an action plan that is in the process of being costed and finalized. So I think that it will provide us with a good opportunity to bring not only these issues, but the mapping out of that. Perhaps just to indicate that in relation to the measles outbreak, the partnership with the Department of Health was extraordinary. Both at provincial level and at national level, we got full cooperation, including a commitment and a recognition out of that, that in the broad anti-measles campaign, which the Department of Health is running over the next couple of financial years, starting with Gauteng, the risks attached to measles outbreaks within our environment are such that we have been pulled into that campaign. So although there are the major challenges that we've mapped out here, there are also elements of very good cooperation taking place. But we would certainly welcome an opportunity to interrogate it in more detail.
I'm hoping that members don't have any comments on this one. If you have, I will allow you. Any comments around the health issues? Your mic, please, Baba.
You know, one time we visited the West prison. There was overcrowding, terrible overcrowding. One inmate asked us, said, if there could be an outbreak of a disease when we're sleeping like this, what do you think, how will you be prevented? I'm telling you, the following year, it was an outbreak. I don't know whether it was the diarrhea or whatever. The cholera. It was terrible, right? So I'm just in fact raising this question of seriousness of overcrowding and the impact on the health. Thank you.
So that is the support that I required. We will certainly have this engagement with you later. We have reached the end of our session. We've reached the end of the calendar year in terms of our interaction with you, and we want to wish you well. We want to reiterate that nothing that happened here was personal, but it was in the interest of service delivery, and we'll continue to be tough on the department where we think we need to be tough in the interest of service delivery to our people. We wish you all a good Christmas. I know that there's a break for many of us, but at least we'll come back refreshed.
to the AG, thank you. We'll continue to use you, but from today's interaction, AG, if we could request that you, as far as possible, are able to give guidance to the department around asset management, because that clearly is a problem in our land. I think they're crying out. If you could manage that as a team, all of us, so that hopefully you don't report on asset management. I know there's a thin line between consulting and being the auditor, but as far as is humanly possible, it's clear that this department needs assistance in that regard. If you can't do it yourself, give us advice, and we will see how we ensure that the department's asset management challenges are overcome. So thank you to the AG staff. We will continue to use you. We'll continue to have these quarterly interactions where we keep each other on toes in here, and that's over and above specific times when we call you for a specific matter. Thank you very much, Ms. Reiner, and your team, members of parliament, to our friends in the media and everybody else. Thank you very much. From our side, we don't meet until late January, so we wish you happy holidays.